From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today with Lent upon us. We're always focused on Easter going forward, and we focus on the life and death of Jesus Christ prior to that, of course. And this past week, we celebrate a big devotion, and that is the Holy Face devotion. And in my mind, this is a devotion that's catching fire, or re-catching fire, you might say, with faithful Catholics all over the world and around the United States. And we've got a brand new book that's out. It's called Secret of the Holy Face, The Devotion Destined to Save Society. It's out from Tan Books. It's about the Holy Face devotion. We'll be talking with Father Lawrence Daniel Carney III, the author of that book. And later in the show, we'll be talking with Mauro Borelli. He is the director and screenwriter of a movie called The Last Supper. So this is a movie that's coming out, and it depicts some of the great miracles of Jesus, which draws my special attention and, of course, puts a special focus on The Last Supper. So we'll be excited to talk tomorrow in just a little bit. Check my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every week. This week it's airing March 16th on Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. Canonization candidate Father Al Schwartz is dedicated his life to working with the poorest of the poor, establishing youth programs and founding religious orders that still serve his worldwide mission long after his death. This is one of my favorite episodes of They Might Be Saints about Father Al Schwartz. Check that one out on Sunday, March 16th at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. My other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, we're doing the program on Tre Fontane, and on March 15th, on Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time, Explore with the Miracle Hunter investigates a miraculous encounter at the site where St. Paul was martyred, and the Virgin of Revelation's appearance to Bruno Carnacchiola, a rabid anti-Catholic, changed both the man and the church itself. Check that one out, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Tre Fontane, on March 15th at 5 p.m. Central Time. And if you'd rather go beyond just watching my shows on television as I travel around the world, if you'd like to travel with me, you can join me on a Jubilee Year pilgrimage to Italy. We'll be going to Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome for the canonization of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. And those dates are July 28th through August 4th. Coming right up, and we'll be looking at all these places of saints and miracles, and we'll be seeing Marian apparition sites and visiting the Duomo in Milan. We'll visit Turin to see the cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held. We'll walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati and see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions. We'll go to Florence to see the place of many great artists, of course, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Botticelli, Donatello. And we'll see Michelangelo's David, as well as the site of the Marian apparition to the seven holy founders of the Servites. And we'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites around the Vatican. And, of course, ending with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. You can join us on this pilgrimage if you go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. Again, this is July 28th through August 4th. We hope to see you there. Let's take a look, later in the show, we're going to be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today, we've got Blessed Joachim Kuruman in 1555 to 1624 in Japan. And the 365 Days with Mary Project is for Our Lady of the Tears in Campinas in Brazil in the year 1928. And the question of the week, what is the largest number of people to ever witness a Marian apparition at the same time? We'll do our best to answer that one later in the show. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we look at the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And for this week, we had some big miracle news, and I got all kinds of emails and calls about this one. There's a possible Eucharistic miracle that's been claimed at St. Anthony's Catholic Church in Morris, in Indiana. And so it might be a case of an extremely rare Eucharistic miracle happening in Morris. And a wafer that was used for communion fell on the floor. It was disregarded and placed inside a dish within the tabernacle to dissolve. And that was placed in a dish a few weeks ago. And on Saturday, a parishioner opened the tabernacle and was surprised to find a reddish substance also in the dish. And several members of the church believe the substance of the blood to be the blood of Christ, with the possible miracle known as a bleeding host. And we have we have the situation where the bleeding host or the appearance of a bleeding host in Morris has not been confirmed, as a lengthy investigation could ensue. And, of course, the Catholic Church looks at these things skeptically, and they want to see it proven by science. We have cases of alleged Eucharistic miracles, even here in the United States, where it's red bread mold that results in that that bright red color. So if, in fact, they were to investigate this and find this to be a case of true flesh and true blood, they would refer the miracle to the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith in Rome for further investigations. Of course, there have been very few of Eucharistic miracles throughout history. Perhaps as few as 30 bleeding host miracles have been claimed or have been validated in some way by the Catholic Church. So we'll be paying attention to that one. I think that was big news that was reported this past week, and we'll let you know the latest results when we get them. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give out a prize to an emailer that writes in with the correct answer. Last week, we had the question of which pope had the shortest timeline between his death and canonization. That answer, of course, was Pope St. John Paul II, who lived from April 2nd, 2005. That's when he died, and his canonization was April 27th, 2014, so 9 years later. So that was the shortest path to canonization for a pope. So that was quite quick. Most other canonizations of popes take perhaps decades or centuries. In this week's question, we're talking today about the Holy Face devotion, which stems from the scene of St. Veronica wiping the face of Jesus. And we're asking, what has St. Veronica become known as the patron saint of? So again, that question for today is, what is the patronage? What is St. Veronica the patron saint of? If you think you know that question, send me an answer to questions@miracle100.com, and maybe you'll have the right answer and win that prize. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Mauro Borelli, the director and screenwriter for the new film, The Last Supper. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. When we're around Easter time of every year, we see various Christian films hitting the theaters. This is the perfect time of year, as we have Easter being the ultimate celebration, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, for us to focus on. And many movies hit the theater, and this year is no exception. There's a great new film that's out that's called The Last Supper. And it's brought to us by Mauro Borelli. He is the director and screenwriter for this brand new film, The Last Supper. And I was able to watch it ahead of time, and it is quite a striking and beautiful film. And it starts out with the miracle of the 5,000, where Jesus is providing food, the loaves and the fishes, for the crowds that are gathered to see him. So the movie is replete with the miracles of Jesus, and it's quite a compelling film. We're so excited to discuss this new film and find out what was the motivation for bringing it out at this time. And that is Mauro Borelli. Welcome to the program today, Mauro.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for having me here with you guys.
Thank you. Congratulations on this beautiful film. I was able to watch it, and it is so well done with the actors and the scenes, and it's really a compelling film. What made you focus on The Last Supper?
Well, you know, 1 year ago, there was a strike by the actors in Hollywood. So the whole Hollywood was like stopped, you know, there was no film going. So I wanted to make something, you know, that I can make maybe with a small group of actors in Italy or in Europe, and on a small, let's say, space, like a room, you know. So, and then I see this beautiful painting of Leonardo da Vinci about the Last Supper, and I got very attracted by that idea. I did a little exploration. I found out no movie were ever done that were only focusing on what happened during that moment. And it's such of an important moment, and, you know, like everybody every year celebrate Easter time, and, you know, And I said, well, this is a great opportunity for make a great exploration. So I started writing it as a small movie. But then, you know, I met with the Pinnacle Peak, you know, and Pure Flix people. And the movie started to expand and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it became pretty epic at the end. But yes, the idea was, I want to offer to those that know the story so well already, knows all, you know, the world of the Eucharistia. And I want to offer like another angle to watch, to see more about it, to see what happened in the kitchen, how they make the food. And, you know, like, so it's like, this is a great opportunity to bring the audience to experience that from inside a little bit, you know. So we start to work on detail and try to be more accurate as possible. You know, there was no intention to do anything controversial. I wanted to stay very close to the scripture, but just showing, you know, a little more of how at that time, you know, the costumes and the props and the art direction, so that people can really have a feeling to be transported during that time. So that was the challenge and the inspiration, yeah, for it.
Wonderful. Well, it's a beautiful film and a great success from how you describe what you're trying to accomplish. The name of the film is The Last Supper Movie. It's out in theaters on March 14th. We're talking today with Mauro Borelli, the director and screenwriter for this brand new film. And Mauro, I know you're Catholic, and this is a Catholic television or radio network, I should say. So The Last Supper is extremely important for all Christians, of course. It's the institution of the Eucharist. But Catholics have a special view of the Eucharist as the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ as established at the Last Supper. How did you hope to bring that to light to audiences who may or may not be Catholic?
My approach, you know, like on the film, was that I want to figure it out what the most important things that I want to tell in the story. And while staying very close to the scripture, I found out that this can be great for everybody, for all the audience that are religious and non-religious, so they can know a little more about it, right? So one of the things that happened to me, you know, when I was doing the research is, when I was a kid, I was an altar boy for a couple of years, when I was 8, 9 years old, in my small city. And I remember during the communion time and the Eucharistia, right? I hear those, you know, words that we hear all the time. This is my blood. This is my body, you know, and the bread. But I never really had an understanding of that really deeply, what it was, right? So what I learned during this experience of making this movie was that actually during that time, it was a Passover celebration, a Jewish celebration. And what was done at that time was the blood of a lamb was used to put on top of the door of those houses that were celebrating that moment as a sacrifice to God for sparing for the escaping to Egypt, you know, for the salvation of the Jewish. And I figured out, well, Jesus is basically becoming the lamb, so he's changing that day during that moment. Is changing the lamb of the blood with his own blood, and it's almost like if you have a credit card that you have to pay the interest every year, and the interest that you pay is the blood of the lamb, and you never end up to pay the credit card in full, and Jesus comes to pay in full, and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's like I never thought about it, you know, like it's like, well, this is great. So Jesus became the lamb. And his blood became the sacrifice that was done for all of us, and once forever, like to pay in full, you know. So that element was something that always escaped me a little bit, you know. Never thought about, and for me, it was a beautiful thing to see, you know, how important that sacrifice was.
Beautiful.
And the other thing was the relationship with Peter, you know, and Judas. I thought it was very important that even these days, that some you know, people sometimes they can go to the wrong path. I didn't want to do a Judah that was extremely bad from the beginning. I want to show that he's a torture man, somebody that actually choose the wrong path when he feels the temptation by Satan. And Peter also denied Jesus, so they're both somehow complementary, you know. But Peter found the strength, you know, and he find the right path. So it's like everybody, you know, that watch this movie, they can see themselves into a moment of their life that they can feel tempted or they can feel, you know, weak, you know what I mean? And but there is a hope, but there's a way to find the strength. And if you follow Peter, we can move on and restore ourselves. You know what I'm saying? So that, for me, was important to show that, you know, as well.
Wonderful. We've been talking today with Mauro Borelli, the director and screenwriter for this film, The Last Supper, which is in theaters March 14th. And Mauro, I imagine that as a screenwriter and a director, you have a vision of how things should look when you write it, when you direct the actors. I must ask you, what was your favorite scene from this movie? The scene where you said, yes, the actors got it exactly how I envisioned it. This is the beautiful portrayal of what I wrote. What's your favorite scene of your movie?
Well, my favorite scene is a moment when Judas goes to see Caiaphas, the high priest. And he goes there to tell him, okay, I know where you can find Jesus. You know, he's going, basically, he makes the wrong decision for his life. And Caiaphas say, well, you know, but why, you know, what you think about, what made you doing this? You know, so you realize that Jesus is not, what Jesus says is not strong enough or real, you know, enough. And Judas say, no, actually, Jesus did what they say. And he tells this beautiful story when he was, when Jesus duplicate, multiply the fish and the bread, and when Jesus was walking on water. So that's a moment like, almost like, oh, come on, Judas, you see all this, and you still wanna, you're going to betray. And I'm like, almost like, so that you can see that the Judas actually knows that Jesus is God and still is tortured by Satan, and it cannot, it's almost like a part of the divine prophecy that he has to fill for, you know. But I like that moment because the acting of Rob Knepper, which is the actor from Prison Break, and James Faulkner, they're fantastic in that moment. So if with all those that will watch the movie, pay attention to that moment. It's a fantastic acting scene, yeah.
Good. I know it's important to know the director's favorite part, so people will pay special attention to that. Now, Mauro, the name of this film is The Last Supper Movie. It's available in theaters March 14th. Aside from people sort of understanding the basics of how The Last Supper works and seeing people in costume and understanding the culture and tradition and the foods that were served, what is your hope for people who see your film, The Last Supper, and they walk away from it? What is the impact you hope to have?
Well, I hope they come out, and I'm not talking only to the Catholic or the evangelical, or, you know, talking to everybody. I thought they'd go out with an uplifting moment in their heart. You know, like, we're living in a world that you see films where you go out, yeah, they're interesting, but then you always have a little bit of bitterness inside. I want people leaving the theater in peace and happy. You know what I mean? Like, so if I can convey that that moment of peace and joy, an uplifting spiritual moment in their life, no matter who they are, you know what I mean? Like, I accomplish my biggest goal. That will be my aspiration to this, yes.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Mauro Borelli, the director and screenwriter for The Last Supper. Thank you so much for putting together this beautiful film. Best wishes on its success, and thank you for joining us on the program today.
Yes, thank you. And also, you know, I would like to kind of dedicate to this to Pope Francis, that he's going through a harsh time now with his illness, and pray for him recovery. And, you know, so that's it, you know.
Yeah, thank you for that. This is a perfect time to keep Pope Francis in our minds as he recovers from his illness. Thank you so much, Mauro, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
God bless. That was Mauro Borelli, the director of the Last Supper movie. Check that one out. Opens in theaters March 14th. And for more information and to watch a trailer, you can go to thelastsupper.movie to find out more about this incredible new film that's just in time for the Lenten season. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to try to answer the question of the week. What is the largest number of people to receive a Marian apparition at the same time? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles that happened are happening in today's world, like that Eucharistic miracle that was just claimed in Indiana, and also miracles that have happened centuries ago. And we have another question about Marian apparitions, this one coming from John. John says, Dear Miracle Hunter, what is the largest number of people to receive a Marian apparition at the same time? Thank you, John. Well, thanks, John, for your question. And it's a good one. I think we look at Christian history and we look at Marian apparitions and we see the vast majority of cases, it's only a single visionary who received these, like our St. Bernadette Subaru of Lourdes. And but there are some with small groups like the Fatima Children and others, but we don't really see numbers like at Medjugorje, where there were six visionaries that claimed visions of the Virgin Mary. That's a very large number. But what is the largest number? That's John's question. And so I'll answer it in two different ways. So one is there is this case in Batania, Venezuela. That is the case of a Marian apparition that was on March 25th, 1984. According to the reports, 108 people there in Venezuela, people from all walks of life, men, women, children, doctors, lawyers, people, regular people, just witnessed the Virgin Mary appearing there with those related to the apparitions of Maria Esperanza de Bianchini. And that was approved by the local bishop as established as supernatural, constate supernaturalitate. So that's a pretty remarkable one and one that stands out to me. And we can also look at Zaytun in Egypt. This happened from 1968 to 1971 in the Cairo area, where this was witnessed by, I don't know how many thousands of people over the course of years. This was a case of the Virgin Mary supposedly walking on the rooftops of St. Mark's Coptic Orthodox Church there. And we see her witnessed by Christians, Muslims, Jews, atheists, and even broadcast on Egyptian television. So there were many, many people who were said to have witnessed her walking silently in light, surrounded by doves. This is outside the jurisdiction of the Catholic, Roman Catholic Church to make a true judgment on this. But this, of course, was recognized in the Orthodox Church. And so so as far as large numbers witnessing Marian apparitions, I would say those are two great examples. So thanks, John, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. And of course, you all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But there's a different other Marian devotion that lines up to each and every day of the calendar year. And countries all around the world, they're celebrating in feast days and celebration of miracles and other ways of commemorating and honoring Our Lady. And so for today's day, March 8th, we've got Our Lady of Tears from Campinas in Brazil in the year 1928. And the story goes that Amalia Aguirre, she helped found the missionaries of Jesus Crucified in 1928, taking the name of Sister Amalia of the Scourged Jesus. And she received mystical gifts of stigmata and visions of Jesus, who gave her three prayers to the sorrowful heart of Mary. And 4 months later, in another vision, it was said that Mary appeared in a violet robe, blue mantle, and a white veil, and handed Amalia an illuminated rosary of tears to be said with three prayers. And she was later said to see Mary on April 8th, 1930, with a medal of Our Lady of the Tears. Francisco de Campos Barreto, the Bishop of Campinas, and he was the Institute's founder. He issued an imprimatur in 1938-34 to the Rosary of Tears and promoted the medal, recounting the many miracles that were claimed in Brazil and Europe. And of course, the imprimatur now is the fullest extent of a Marian apparition that can be a level of approval. It used to be such that it was required that it was established as supernatural, constate supernaturalitate. But now, as of last year, 2024, we see that the new norms say that the nihil obstat, the imprimatur, coming out of the Vatican would be the highest level of approval. So we'll see if the Vatican at some point makes a statement about this case, Our Lady of the Tears from Campinas in Brazil, from the date March 8th in the year 1928. Let's take a look at sainthood news. We do this every week where we look at the news about people advancing along the path to sainthood. And of course, we're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, and those people who have all their miracles, don't have all their miracles yet before they're declared saints by Rome. And so out of his hospital room, Pope Francis actually convened a consistory where he looked at the canonization causes moving forward, and he granted an audience to His Eminence Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Secretary of State, and the Monsignor Edgar Peña Parra, the substitute for General Affairs. The Holy Father authorized the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtue of the servant of God, Miguel Maura Montaner, the diocesan priest and founder of the Congregación de las Hermanas Celadoras de Culto Eucarístico. He was born in Palo de Mallorca in Spain on September 6, 1843, and he died there on September 19, 1915. And according to the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints website, he was a man of deep prayer. He had unlimited trust and filial devotion towards the Blessed Virgin Mary. He also exercised his faith in teaching theology, in training future priests, and in preaching the missions. And that is servant of God Miguel Maura Montaner, whose heroic virtue has been established and is now venerable. With one miracle, he'll be declared blessed. With a second miracle, he will be a saint. And that is the sainthood news for today. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We look at people on the path to sainthood and see who has a feast day in the case of blesseds or a death anniversary that lines up exactly to the day's date. And for today's date, we have Blessed Joachim Coromon, who lived from 1559 to 1664 in Japan. And he was born in 1559 in Aki in Japan. And he was a layman and a catechist in the Diocese of Hiroshima in Japan, and he was a martyr. And he died on March 8, 1624 in Hiroshima. And he was declared venerable in 2007 by Pope Benedict XVI in a decree of martyrdom. And on November 24, 2008, he was declared blessed by Pope Benedict XVI. And his beatification was celebrated at the Nagasaki Prefectura Baseball Park in Nagasaki, Japan. It was presided over by Cardinal Jose Sariva Martins. And that is Blessed Joachim Coromon. With one miracle, he will be Saint Joachim from Japan. And that is today's Might Be Saint of the Day. Let's take a look at what will be airing this week on They Might Be Saints. On Sunday, March 16th at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, the episode of They Might Be Saints is Father Al Schwartz. And he's a canonization candidate who dedicated his life to working with the poorest of the poor, establishing youth programs and founding religious orders that still serve his worldwide mission long after his death. And that is They Might Be Saints, Father Aloysius Schwartz. That was an amazing episode to film. We traveled to Mexico and we went to the Villa de las Niñas, the girls' town, you might call it. And we saw where there were 4,000 girls there who were tended to by the sisters of Father Al Schwartz. They take care of him in a tremendous way. It was a truly eye-opening experience. So I encourage people to check that one out. They Might Be Saints, Father Aloysius Schwartz. You can find about his incredible work in Korea and Mexico and around the world. Truly eye-opening. That's March 16th at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Lawrence Daniel Carney III, the author of The Secret of the Holy Face. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
This past week, we had a celebration for the beginning of Lent, which coincides, which we talk about Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras. It coincides with the feast day of the Holy Face. And this is a devotion that's caught my attention in a big way in recent times. I think a lot of Catholics around the United States and around the world are embracing this devotion anew. Obviously, this is an older devotion, but that it's coming up again. And so many people are talking about this Holy Face. And we've got a great book that's out. It's called Secret of the Holy Face, The Devotion Destined to Save Society. And it comes to us from Father Lawrence Daniel Carney III. We welcome to the program today, Father Carney.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. And this this Holy Face devotion is something that I have various friends who are excited about this and others. And this book came across my desk of yours, The Secret of the Holy Face, out from Tan Books. And I just wanted to have you on in light of the feast day that was this past week to talk a little bit about this devotion. I think that many people have the conception rightfully that this sort of stems from St. Veronica, the wiping of the face of Christ on his path. But there's much more to it than that. How did it go from this story, this legend, this reality, perhaps, of the wiping of the face by Veronica?
Yeah, so St. Veronica is a true icon, and Blessed Anne Catherine Emmerich believes her name was Serapha. She came to Rome and showed the veil to the emperor, who had a malady, and he was healed on the spot. And then she gave the veil to the Pope Clement I, and all the popes have owned it since. So it's in the Vatican. And then go fast forward to the 1848, Jesus began to appear to Sister Marie de Saint-Pierre, Carmelite, Tours. And Jesus said that this devotion would help to stamp out revolutionary men and communism. And so she received these revelations. They were called intellectual visions, like St. Padre Pio received. And they were talking about communism 5 years before the Communist Manifesto came out. And so her last year of receiving these revelations was coincided with the Communist Manifesto. And Michael, we know that communism really wasn't something but just a philosophy then until the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. And then there's a man named Venerable Leo Pont, who was nicknamed the Holy Man of Tours. He grew up in Martinique in the Caribbean, but he moved to Tours, and he became very close to the Carmelites there because he grew up on a sugar plantation, and he had revenues coming in, so he had lots of leisure time. He was a lawyer, but he had lots of time to pray. He would go around the town of Tours and pray at different churches, but the Mother Superior told him that this novice was receiving these visions and locutions about the Holy Face devotion. And so he saw this devotion as something that could stomp out the revolution that was going on in the 1840s. And so really quickly, he received an image of the veil of Veronica and put it in his drawing room and lit a lamp burning day and night, olive oil. And this is what is so important. A mere layman had 6,000 to 10,000 certified miracles because of giving oil to people. So this is a huge secret. And I'll stop there for a minute.
Yeah, no, this is incredible. And most people do not know about this. And you detail this in your book called Secret of the Holy Face, The Devotion Destined to Save Society. And of course, we have some. We can also mention people like Saint Therese of the Child Jesus, of the Holy Face, as somebody who had this devotion as well. And we have the Shroud of Turin, which is perhaps the face that we see connected with this devotion. Talk a little bit about taking it into modern times, even where this devotion has gone.
Yeah. So the object of this devotion that Jesus wanted was the veil of Veronica, that deals with the Passion. And the Shroud of Turin is the face of our Lord, too. But that one has a different object, and that deals with the death of Jesus. And then there's the mandolin, and there's also the Veil of Montepello, which Veil of Montepello could be considered the resurrection of Jesus because it was that napkin on his face. So I like to make those distinctions because Jesus wanted an association of people that would become prayer warriors to fight against the revolution in modern times, which are now. And so he wanted this association to be attached to the Vow of Veronica. And so those miracles happened to Venerable Leo Pont by the Vow of Veronica. Now, there's a little background. In 1849, the Pope was under attack by the Freemasons, and he exiled himself in the Gaeta. It was Pope Blessed Pius IX. And the canons of St. Peter's Basilica decided to take the Vow of Veronica out for 3 days to make reparation, which was unheard of. And on the third day, a miracle happened. The veil was covered by a blank piece of fabric. It was either silk or linen. And this blank fabric received the lines of a man that was in deep sorrow and going through a passion. And there was a light that emanated from it without the use of candles or any artificial ways. And so artists saw this and they drew it. And it was certified by the Vatican notary and it was a talk of Rome for months. And these artist renditions were copied and were made available and they were touched to the Vow of Veronica, part of the cross and the Spirit of Longinus and sent all abroad. So this is what Venerable Leo Pont received. It's one of these relics that was touched the veil, which is amazing because the veil, right now, you can't see his face because it's so faded. So this miracle was telling us that that veil is still there. It's still truly the Vow of Veronica and that people devoted to Jesus through this passion in the veil and, you know, the story of the sixth station of the cross, that this would be a means where to stop world revolution.
Amazing. We're talking today with Father Lawrence Carney about his book, Secret of the Holy Face. We're talking about the Holy Face devotion because it lines up this week to the feast day of the Holy Face. There are various images, Father, about related to the Holy Face, the Shroud of Turin, the Veil of Veronica, the Manipello image, the Edessa image, the Sudarium of Oviedo. We have all these various cloths that relate to Jesus' face. How do we understand all these different cloths that are claimed that exist? How do they all work together?
So the Veil of Veronica was from Veronica wiping the face of Jesus on the way of the cross. And the Shroud of Turin were the winding sheets that basically about 12 feet long that were folded and were buried with Jesus. And the Bella Montepello is the napkin that was placed on the face of Jesus when he was buried. And so those are the main ones that I focused on. And they're all related to the face of Jesus, of course. But stress is put on how the Vow of Veronica is to fight the current revolution. And also the fact that the church is going through her passion. The object of the Vow of Veronica is different than the other one because it deals with the passion. Whereas the Shroud of Turin deals with the death and the Vow of Montepello deals with the resurrection because it's supposed that our Lord, when he rose from the dead, he quote-unquote burned his face on the Vow of Montepello. Yeah, all of them are the face of Jesus, but Jesus specifically wanted the Vow of Veronica to be the object where we would fight against the revolution. So Jesus told Sister Mary St. Peter that his Father in heaven is greatly disappointed by the human race for two sins, blasphemy, profanation of Sundays and holy days. And it would be by this image, the Vow of Veronica, that we could turn this around and beg God to fight this war for us. So the very curse was that the Father would punish us with the scourge of revolutionary men. And so we saw that in 2020, a brief synopsis of what that could look like. And this devotion is a blueprint to fight against that, and which is awesome because we don't have to make up anything here. It's written out for us. This devotion is so deep and detailed. There's 9 promises, and there's a whole manual, the Archconfessional of the Holy Face, that is rich in prayers. It was printed in 1887, and approved by the local ordinary there, the Archbishop of Tours.
How do we find these things or get connected to them? How do we join the Archconfraternity? How do we enroll in this devotion? What are the ways that people who are interested in this and excited about this, what can they do next?
Sure, they can search our website called the League of St. Martin. And we have ecclesiastical enrollment, so that means there's a PDF. People can fill that out, and they can take a picture of it and send it to the email on the form, and it will go to Tours. And there's 6 conditions. 1, enroll. 2, receive the enrollment papers. 3, every day say, O Lord, show us thy face, and we shall be saved, and our Father, Hail Mary, and glory be. 2, propagate this devotion would be a 4th thing, through prayer, writing, or preaching about it. Where 5th one would be to wear a Holy Face image. And 6thly, to go to the monthly meeting. And so the League of St. Martin, we coach people how to get together and have a monthly meeting. So that's the League of St. Martin. If they would search that, they'll find out some of the bullet points here, how to do this practically.
The name of this book is Secret of the Holy Face, The Devotion Destined to Save Society. For people who want to find out more, perhaps pick up this book, learn about more what's in it. What's a good place for people to connect to you and find out more about this book?
Yeah, so search the League of St. Martin, and they can connect with us there. We have our book there linked so that they can purchase it through TAN Book.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Lawrence Carney, author of the book, Secret of the Holy Face, The Devotion Destined to Save Society. I think this is a perfect book to pick up as we enter Lent and head towards the Passion and Death of our Lord Jesus Christ and Easter Sunday. I think this is a great devotion to become connected with and to learn more about. We thank you, Father Carney, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you for having me again, Mike.
God bless. That was Father Lawrence Carney talking to us about his book, Secret of the Holy Face, The Devotion Destined to Save Society. That's out from TAN Books. Pick this one up and learn about this devotion that, like I mentioned before, so many people I know are getting excited and attached to the Holy Face devotion. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Lawrence Carney, author of The Secret of the Holy Face, and Mauro Borelli, director of the new film The Last Supper in theaters March 14th. Check out my television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. It airs every week on Saturdays at 5 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Eastern. This week on March 15th, we've got the episode on Tre Fontane. I investigate a miraculous encounter at the site where St. Paul was martyred, the Virgin of Revelation's appearance to Bruno Cernacchiola, a rabid anti-Catholic, changed both the man and the church itself. Check that one out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter on Saturday, March 15th at 5 p.m. Central Time. And if you'd rather not just watch my shows, but go on a pilgrimage with me, you can join me on a Jubilee Year pilgrimage, July 28th through August 4th. We'll be going to Rome, Milan, Florence, and Turin. We'll see the Marian apparition sites there, visit the Duomo in Milan, Turin to see the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist, where the Shroud of Turin is held. We'll walk in the footsteps of Pier Giorgio Frassati, see the place where St. John Bosco had his famous visions, and we'll go to Florence, home to many great artists, Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, Botticelli, Donatello. We'll see Michelangelo's David, as well as the site of the apparition of Mary to the 7 holy founders of the Servites. We'll finish up in Rome to see the many incredible sites around the Vatican, and finish with the canonization of one of the great modern saints, and that's Pier Giorgio Frassati. So check that one out. Go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter to find out more and to sign up. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.